guys, welcome to the podcast Weatherlight. I'm Tandy with your regular hosts, Jacob and Jordan.
Howdy.
Hey, kids.
So, boys, how's everything been?
Good job jumping over our guest host,
yeah,
Tandy.
Yeah, this is Jared. I'm back again.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Jared.
You're a terrible person and we hate you, Tandy. I'm sorry.
I remember you exist.
I'm moving up from guest host to, like, affiliate.
Yeah, you're like...
Don't get too crazy. Don't get too crazy.
You're like a recurring character.
Yeah, like you may not be like a star. Like, you know how like they have the starring roles and they have like the supporting characters. Like, you're definitely a supporting character, Jared.
I know. I'm a great supporting character.
You're one of those characters that's like gets listed as a guest star in every other episode, and then just becomes billed as a star in like the third season.
I'd be okay with that, actually.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. Like I said, moving up to affiliate status here.
Well, I hope you guys appreciate
that. Second tier member.
I hope you guys can appreciate that we have decided to bring Jared on and that he will bring his lovely insights to our thoughts. It will be beautiful. Anyways, we should talk about some things that have happened this week. So, they have released a lot more spoilers for Commander's Arsenal.
That is correct.
How many... I think we know all of them. Is that correct? Or is that...
I don't think so. Let me go back to the...
Yeah, it's...
Spoiler. There's... How many do we have so far?
Oh, that's a number one.
Let's see. 36, 9,
15?
18? Oh, 18, that is all of them then.
Yeah, 18. Yeah, so we have the entire set.
Well, this is disappointing then. Wow.
Well, I mean, it's actually an incredibly valuable thing, and like we've also found out that the print run, like, not even just being a limited print run product, it's like
it is 1/6 of the print run of From the Vault.
Yeah, it's like impossible.
Meaning my local game store, which serves a town of about 250,000 people, is getting 2 copies.
Oh, wow, that's, like, a very low amount of copies.
So one of them is going to be auctioned, and one of them is going to be the prize for a standard tournament.
Is it going to be auctioned, like, for money, or is it going to be raffled? Like people are going to be paid higher?
I'm not sure. It might be a raffle. I'm not sure. But which is kind of disappointing, because there are, like, exactly 2 cards I want out of it. Those being Sylvan Library and Mirari's Wake.
And I hear you want multiple Sylvan Libraries.
Yeah, I want them for 2 of my EDH decks and for my cube.
I want Sylvan Library as well. I also, like, I want a scroll rack for EDH, and, like, I want that different art duplicate for my Omnath deck, because it's, like, the only type of spell that can destroy creatures in Omnath. So I want that. I think it'll be interesting, like, to see how few there are. Like, if Greeley, the city that you're kind of talking about, is only getting 2, like, how many are going to be in this entire state of Colorado? Like, 30? Is that a good estimate? Like,
I would assume so. That seems kind of liberal. Like, it might be lower.
Like if there's going to be, like, under 100 of them in the state, like, there are going to be gigantic supply issues with that, yeah?
Yeah, well, and it's just, like, there aren't that many things I'm excited about. Like,
exactly.
Sure, Loyal Retainers is cool, but it's, like, it's a reanimation, it's a very limited reanimation spell.
Yeah, but it costs, like, $1 billion.
Yeah, but it's a replaceable effect. Like, it's not like, say, Sensei's Top, which every EDH deck needs, and, you know, if that were $150, that would be annoying.
Yeah, but I mean, there is cards like Scroll Rack, which every EDH deck would be better with, I would argue, and there's Command Tower, and Duplicant, and Mind's Eye, and Sylvan Library for all the green decks, and Decree of Plain for the black decks. Like, I do think that, like, I don't think that there's anything particularly splashy about this set. Like,
Yeah. That's what makes me upset, though, is because it doesn't feel splashy enough to justify the $75 price.
Well, considering that one card in it is worth $150, I think that...
See, the thing about that is I don't care. Like, Lawyer Retainers is not, like, Maze of Ith, where it's just good in every single deck.
Exactly. Like, I feel like I'm not...
That's like if they put Imperial Seal in it. Sure, it's a very good card, and it's like a $200, or maybe more than that. It's like a $600 card.
More than that. It's much more than that.
But there are other cards that do the same thing. Like, it's not unique.
Right. It doesn't feel splashy enough. Jacob's right on that.
Like, I would love if this had, like, Mana Drain in it. In the place of Loyal Retainers as the, like, really expensive thing.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool, except I believe Mana Drain... Is Mana Drain on the reserve list or not?
I don't
think it might be, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just... While all these cards are great and they cost a lot, Jacob's right, they're not splashy enough for me to feel justified in spending $75 on
them. Also,
like,
I'm very...
Hoping other Magic players to get it as well.
I'm very, like, not excited about the prospect of a higher percentage of Magic, of EDH decks in the world than previously having Rhystic Study.
Yeah.
I agree.
That card is, like,
is great.
Pure annoyingness. Like I was telling you guys before, I would rather it just say, whenever an opponent casts a spell, draw a card for the same mana cost.
Rhystic Study is fantastic. I don't know what you're
It's a very powerful card. It's a very good card, but it is annoying as hell to play with.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it's just
like
because
both with and against.
It's so, so annoying. It's like, it's kind of like how every, it's like, imagine if you were driving and every intersection had a stop sign.
Well, I guess it, like, forces the control player to pay attention to the game, like, a bit more. Just, like, stay focused.
Doesn't, like, the game do that?
Also slows down, like, decks like my Golgari deck that wants to, like, once it gets going, it wants to resolve a lot of spells because you have a lot of mana, and it's, like, every time, like, it's not that I have to pay one, it's that the control player has to remind me to pay one, and so it's, like, every time I'm, like, play a spell, did you pay the one on that? Did you pay the one?
My general plan against Rhystic Study is ignore them and never pay the one, like, don't ever answer them, and just kill them first, like, target them.
But see, I think that's,
like,
part of, like, the
appeal. Like, the best way to get them to stop bugging you to pay if you want fries with your spells is to kill them.
See, I think, like, I think the requirement of, like, making people make decisions as to whether or not they want to pay it or play it, or just slow down their play, like,
but
that's also sort of the appeal of Rhystic Study. It means, like,
that,
are,
except
like,
that is not in any sense appealing.
It's appealing. The thing
to
is,
me as
it's appealing to a very, very narrow set of people at the detriment of, like, everyone
else. I understand you want to, like, make the game difficult for your opponent and give them more decisions, but this is just, like, either you let them have a bunch of cards or you don't. And it slows the game way down. Like, it's the same concept as what I was saying a few weeks ago about new players. Like, if there's a new player that's really slowing the game down, my plan is just kill them first so we can get rid of them and the game will go faster.
Yeah, does it really slow it down as much as we think it does,
though?
It does.
Not by the fact of, like, how much time is spent on it, but it's the fact that time is always spent on it. Like, the thing is about Rhystic Study is, unlike, like, the kind of deck that plays Rhystic Study, interestingly enough, plays counter spells. And so when, you know, like, when you're seeing if you can resolve a spell against a counter player, that counter player is going to take time to consider whether something's going to resolve.
Exactly. So that's
as opposed to Rhystic Study, which is just like you forget about it, and then the player is always reminding you to pay one, which you either do or you don't, and you shouldn't have to waste time.
But see, you said exactly my point, though. In that deck where you're playing Rhystic Study, you're also playing Counterspells. So even though you're just trying to go off, like,
why do you have
you're
to
already pay? You're already having to wait time to see if the Counterspell goes through.
Your
or
opponent
not.
Shouldn't have.
Yeah,
to...
Yeah, and so you shouldn't make it worse.
You're not making it worse. It's the same time being used.
No, it's not.
No, because you're the one who decides whether or not you're paying for Rhystic Study.
Oh, yeah, like, so yeah. The player with counters is the person who, like, they can hold priority and decide to, cast a counterspell or not. Like, sure, that's fine. that's magic. The problem is the person casting the spell having to make another decision every time they cast a spell and priority going around again.
Yeah.
Like, that adds up when, you know, on average, you have five players and you play two or three spells a turn.
As if those games aren't already going for, like, 4 hours already.
I maintain that if Sensei's Divining Top is like already been destroyed or not in anyone's deck, that Rhystic Study is Krosan grippable.
Well, the thing about Sensei's Divining Top is like it doesn't cause that kind of problem. Neither does something like Mind's Eye, because your opponent, you just like do it during your opponent's turn, and like sure, like the abilities go on the stack and that kind of thing, but there aren't very often decisions for other people, so it doesn't slow down the game. And like you said, it's not like those games aren't already going 4 hours. Like, that's plenty. I don't want them to go 6 hours.
Yeah.
I think that, like, the more important, like, issue with it is, like, how playgroups decide to handle missed triggers like this. Like, because it's a casual game, you don't really want to penalize somebody for not paying attention, but, like, inevitably the person who's playing Rhystic Study, like, will get upset if they miss their trigger, and, like...
No, see, in this instance, with a card like Rhystic Study, I think you're well-justified in saying, like, you missed your trigger too fucking bad. Like, because it, like...
Yeah, that's because if you're playing Rhystic Study, I'm also stabbing you in the stomach.
That seems...
Like, I think Rhystic Study should be banned in EDH for the same reason that Sensei Divining Top was banned in Standard. It's not overpowered. It's powerful, but it makes games take forever.
Yeah.
And in a format where games already take, like, on the order of 3 or 4 hours.
And it's also, like, just annoying. Like, it's not, like, the time isn't even as much of a factor for me is the constant, like, asking, did you pay the extra? Did you pay the extra? Did you pay the extra?
2 seconds, sir.
Yeah, no, but it's 2 seconds every single spell you play.
See, like, imagine there's someone who follows you around and asks you stupid questions all the time. Just like someone you don't like at all. And just like, hey, I want to go to the movies, and you just, like, want to have nothing to do with them. If you just ignore them and never react to them, it doesn't take any time out of your day for them to ask you those questions. But it's still fucking annoying. Like, and that's the same thing, like, Rhystic Study, like, it does add to the time, but, like, even if it didn't, it's still annoying.
I might be biased, because I play Rhystic Study, and I get a lot of use out of it, but I really don't think it's as bad as you guys are making it out to be.
I would rather you played, like, any other card that drew you extra cards. Like, I would rather you pay, like...
Oh, God, with Grand Arbiter on the field, it's even worse.
With Grand Arbiter on the field, it's hilarious.
No, it's actually, like...
Well, Grand Arbiter, like, it's not, like, a trigger you have to remind people of. It's just, like, you have to remind people when they forget to pay more mana for their spells. Like, that's just people not remembering
Grand Arbiter. Isn't that the same thing, though?
It isn't actually the same thing at all. Like, they're actually very, very different. Like,
yeah.
Rhystic Study is optional. Like, people... Like, the thing is...
They're both a consequence, though, of people playing too fast and not letting other people have time.
Yeah, but it's not like Spell Tithe Enforcer, where it's like you want to pay another one for that. It's just like you have to pay another one for that. Like, you always have to do it. It's not an option. So there's no decision point where they like...
Is that much of an option to Rhystic Study, though? Like,
yeah, risk options all the time, because if you're like in a position where you're threatening to win, like, we really don't want to give you extra cards. And so you get all these decisions like, do I want to give him an extra card, or do I want to hold up counterspell mana? Like, that kind of thing happens all the time, and it's just zero fun.
I don't know.
Also, Rhystic Study inherently has an option by the fact that it has an option.
I mean, I guess the simplest way to resolve it is always pay it always, but...
Well, I mean, the thing is, like... That is a very simple way of doing it. Like, you can look at it as just a sheer taxation effect, but it's actually much, much different in the fact that it's, like, I would rather, like, you play Thorn of Amethyst. Like, Thorn of Amethyst effects are much less annoying.
Yeah, I would rather you play a Thorn of Amethyst tacked on to a Phyrexian Arena.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I don't care. Like, the advantage you get is, like, good, but that's not the problem with this card that you get an advantage out of it. The problem with this card is you have all these triggers, like, being annoying.
Well, that's what players need to pay attention, because sometimes you get into an EDH game and just...
It's not that people aren't paying attention. Like even if everyone remembers Rhystic Studies on the field, you still have to announce, like, and I'm paying for Rhystic Study, and I'm not paying for Rhystic Study.
And also, like, you don't have to, like... According to the rules, you don't actually have to... You personally don't have to pay attention to Rhystic Study. It's the owner of Rhystic Study that has to pay attention to Rhystic Study. Like,
well, I would assume that the time that they say pay for Rhystic Study is, like, goes within the time of you're checking everybody's priority in between, like, before the spell resolves.
Well, actually, that happens exactly as they spay it.
That's the same thing as the annoying stalker. Like, even if it doesn't take more time, it's still annoying.
Well, you're probably already paying with counterspells in the first place, so you already have to take that time.
No, but the thing is, that's
like
very
I said,
different.
I don't. It's like actually... even okay. Like I hold that it does take more time, but like let's suppose it doesn't. Like even if the amount of time it takes to like announce and pay for Rhystic Study triggers is completely absorbed in your other decision making time, it's still annoying.
You're still doing that with counterspells, though.
But counterspells actually do something.
Yeah, at least counterspells are like seriously.
Drawing a card is something.
Yeah, you're doing that with something like Spelltithe Enforcer, where everything gets countered. Like everything gets force spiked. There's a difference between having counterspells in your hand and having an enchantment that counters everything.
Yeah, like, it's actually much different. Like, Rhystic Study is nothing like a counterspell because it doesn't actually stop any spells from happening if people don't pay the cost.
Yeah, well, and it's not a one-time thing. It's because, like, if say you're playing counterspells, like, if you know how to play magic, like, you have some sense of which things are worth thinking about countering. Like, if someone plays Rampant Growth, like, it's a very rare situation that you're going to counter Rampant Growth, especially late in an EDH game.
Especially in an EDH game in general, like...
Yeah. And so, like, you know, like, Wraths are a little more complicated, but generally, if you're ahead, you want to counter them. If you're behind, you don't. And so, like, it's not actually all that often you have to do very much actual thinking about countering something.
Yeah, usually counter spells are pretty obvious.
Well, see, perhaps the problem with Rhystic Study, then, is that we just don't have that shorthand for it now because it's not as prevalent, perhaps. Like, we don't have that mental shorthand for, I can afford...
Well, no, the shorthand is actually very easy. Is me holding up this mana worth them having... Like, is this mana going to be worth them having having drawn a card?
So then how is it an issue? Yeah.
Because it's fucking annoying.
It's really annoying.
Like, it's not an issue because it's this complicated decision that takes... Like, I do think it takes time also. Like, I'm with Jacob on that. But I think that that's not even the core of it. I just think that, like... It's the every single spell you play just...
It's the fact that you have to ask.
You have to ask every time. It's very, like... It's actually, in a way, like... It's very, like, it's like that...
You know what? It's annoying because it's usually irrelevant, too.
Well, yeah, I would prefer you have something strictly better where you don't have to ask us.
Yeah, like as a green player, it doesn't actually, like, I hardly ever actually let somebody draw off of a Rhystic Study, but it's annoying because it's, like, it could be just, like, a, like, what's that card? Like, Thorn of Amethyst? Yeah.
See, I'm just talking this up to player laziness, then. Like, not even the card itself.
Like, who is being lazy here, Jordan?
The opponents, then. For not wanting to deal with an effect that's on the field.
But the thing is, it's actually not their effect to deal with. That's the whole problem. If it was their effect to deal with...
They control it, they announce it. Like, is it that...
I'm fine with dealing with it. Like, say... Like, if you play Thorn of the Amethyst, like, I'm fine with paying another mana. Like, you're playing Grand Arbiter, like... That's what it does.
Is it
but the
really
prob-
that much of an? It doesn't really take that much of an effort to decide. I'm going to pay the extra one, or I'm not. I'm just gonna.
It's
let
It's not
them
even go. The no, effort. It's it the annoying. Not.
Yeah.
Well, it's like you have that with all other like taxation effects, though.
And yeah, say, but at least but, you but always have to do them.
Other taxation effects aren't optional, and they're not triggers. Like, taxation effects like Throne of the Amethyst is just like, things cost one more. It's not like when an opponent plays a spell, like, they may pay another mana, and then you have to ask them if they want to pay another mana every time. Like, that's the problem. Is that it's not a static effect. It's a triggered ability that triggers, you know, arbitrarily many times every turn.
And it doesn't do something that's important enough for me to want to waste my time on it. Like, Leyline of Lightning. That's something I want to think about.
Oh, God. I think we're just running this in circles, so let's move on to something else.
Yeah, we're going to have to let this go. We still have, like, these commanders are, like, the commander's arsenal stuff. Like, we talked about them a little bit. I think that I personally, like, just wish they were more printed, but, like, do you guys think, like just how much above MSRP is this going to get sold for?
Oh, I can easily see it being $200.
Oh, just because, like, it's incredibly limited in its print run. I don't fucking see why.
No, I don't really know how high the demand is, because plenty of people are, like, disillusioned with that. And, like, for me, there are really only two cards I want. And because it's, like, kind of evenly spread between colors, so, like, it's going to have something for everyone, but there's no one that all of it is for. Like, I can't see... Like, the reason I went out and bought From the Vault Realms was I used, like, 7 or 8 of those cards across my EDH decks. Like, this... Like, I can't see there being very many people who are going to use more than, like, 5 of these tops, unless you're someone who is, like, Mr. Suitcase with a million EDH decks, but that's a huge minority.
And I think that might have been a problem with them marketing it, because I feel like they marketed it as, like, something all EDH players are going to want, because it's going to have all these rim reprints.
Well, no, that's actually the kind of the opposite of what they did. Like, Aaron Forthice has said multiple times, like, we meant this to be, like, a luxury product for, like...
Was that right close to its initial announcement? Because right,
yeah, like in the initial announcement,
I think you're right, Jacob. He did actually say
that. They said like product. This is bling, like this is for like this is a luxury product. But so people hear that and they think, oh, it's like From the Vault, like it's something fancy to get, like if you want to spend the money on it. but they didn't communicate that meant it was going to be incredibly short supply. So I think what they should have done is, like, for one, communicate that means, like, we are printing 2 of these for the whole world, and, like, B, made the MSRP closer to what it's realistically going to get sold at. Like, make the MSRP $150.
Yeah, like, something. Because people are routinely willing to spend $100 to buy a box of sealed product.
So maybe they should have done to Commander's Arsenal what they're doing with Modern Masters.
Yeah, well, I think so.
I think that's what they should do, but to a much, much bigger degree if this is what they want.
Yeah, it's a more extreme case than Modern Masters because...
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, with Modern Masters, they said, like, this is not for everyone. Like, it's not something, like, cool that, like, new players can get because it has some powerful stuff in it.
Also, this is Commander. Expensive. This is, like, the issue is the fact that, like, calling it, like, a Commander product, quote-unquote, like, Commander isn't just a format. Commander is a brand. Like,
exactly.
It's a sub-brand.
It is Everyman's brand as well. So, like, even calling it a luxury product for the Everyman's, like, game sort of makes it seem like, oh, even though I'm not, like, super, super, duper hardcore, I can still, like, I still might want to splurge on this because it might have stuff I'd use.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it is with From the Vault. So, but, like... Because, like, they should have communicated that it is just for the super, super hardcore. Like made it clear that it wasn't on From the Vault level. And part of that is making the MSRP higher.
Yeah, true. Like, it should have cost $150, $200 just, like, out the door. Like...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly the number because I... Like, other than loyal retainers being expensive, I don't know what these all cost.
Well, like,
but, like, at least $100.
At the very least, like... In the fact that loyal retainers cost so much and this won't be really increasing the supply that much, like, that's gonna be an issue. And also, like, Scroll Rack is pretty expensive. Like, this foil command tower is probably gonna be worth at or above the amount a judge foil is worth, you know, like...
Yeah, and, like, a lot of the foil generals are things that haven't existed in foils before, like Maelstrom Wanderer, and then stuff from
the Mimeoplasm, Spymaster of Trest, yeah.
Yeah. And then the Command Tower. So, like, people are going to want those as their generals. Like, if your general is the Mimeoplasm, this is the one you're going to get.
Right. I think it was just, comes down to Wizards needs to get better at marketing a little bit. Or maybe they learned from this and they applied
it. It's not even marketing. It's really just communication. Like, I feel like there's been this large trend recently about communication that they've had. But what were you going to say, Jared?
Oh, I was just going to say that, I mean, like, I don't think this is really a marketing problem. Actually, what you were saying, Tandy, about communication is a lot better. Like, I mean, like they said, like, it's not, you know, it wasn't meant for everyone. And, like, if you really think about it, like, if this was, like, a product that was meant for everyone, it would have just been, like, all, like, just, like, colorless shit out of, that was, like, found in a lot of the, like, original Commander, like, decks, like... You know, more just Lightning Boots, Greaves.
Lightning Boots probably top, just because every deck wants top.
You know, just like lands that everybody can use, kind of like how like from the Vault Realms was. Is just like everybody can use a land, you know, like just lands that are very commonly used in EDH.
Yeah, like everyone is gonna use Maze of Ith pretty much, like.
Yeah,
unless your colored mana is really, really restricted, you're probably going to use High Market.
Yeah, every black deck in Modern and EDH wants to have an Urborg, you know? Like,
well, I mean, I guess what I mean by my marketing issue is that, like, in the sense that they didn't establish what their target market for that.
Yeah, like they knew what they wanted to market it to, they just didn't communicate that very well.
I actually don't think it's a marketing issue at all, though. Like, I think that this is a marketing success because players are salivating to have this product, which they can't actually
I don't know.
It's like, such a letdown, though. For me, it's a letdown because I was excited to have all these things. I would just be able to play in all my decks.
Are you going
to
stop playing Magic?
I'm not going to stop playing Magic. Not to that extent, but it makes me, like, sort of shaky in what else they might release that, like, they're billing as these, like, luxury products that, like, before it was something like, oh, I could actually use things from that. But seeing this, it's sort of just, like,
I agree with Jordan here, and this is why, like, you say, like it's not going to make people stop playing Magic. Like, sure, killing this guy isn't going to end the world. Like, it's not the worst possible thing in the planet. That doesn't mean we should do it.
True.
Like, and so they use that to justify things too often that, like, it's not going to make people quit that, you know, Avacyn Restored was widely believed to be a terrible draft format. And
but it just shakes the faith.
Yeah. Like, I think it's definitely a marketing problem because it went from, like, from the Vault Realms, like, everyone was excited about. Like, there were a couple, like, very, like, rare cards and, like, everyone could use something out of it. And, like, this is the same thing. Like, it's got some really valuable stuff and it's got some stuff everyone can use. But everyone went from excited about it to pissed off that they're probably not going to get it. And if they are, they're going to spend $200.
Right. And
yeah,
I mean,
I agree with that, actually, but on the other hand, like, Commander's a casual format where supposedly it's really easy to substitute, like, expensive cards with cheaper cards that have, like, similar effects. Like, you know, you can make a halfway decent and fun Commander deck on, like, a budget because, you know, like, it's kind of one of those ones, since it's an Eternal format, like, inherently, anybody that has the, like, the old duels is going to be at an advantage. So
because it's a,
like,
singleton format, like, it's a little less difficult to,
like,
to
it's
play
not
on
a huge advantage. Like, exactly. you could make an EDH deck where the only rares are, like, your general and, like, some Wrath effects, because Wrath effects are always rare and you always want those. But, like, you can have a totally pauper mana base because there's lots of, at least in if you're in an ally colored pair, because
yeah,
there's lots,
like,
of cheap duels.
It is true that they, you know, that it pissed a lot of people off, but, you know, it's not like a product where it's like nobody's telling you that you need a Sylvan Library to be a competitive green deck.
But the,
like,
thing is, you're excited about that. You're excited about maybe having the potential to have, like, those big name, big build cards that you could, like, maybe have that product, but then, like, seeing what comes out of it, it doesn't seem, like, expansive enough, it doesn't seem splashy enough, and it's a letdown, which is why I'm thankful it's actually being released around Ravnica, because how was it released around a lesser set? Like, I could honestly see the backlash just being a bit larger than, like, than just a little bit, like, complaints.
I feel like I think we've made a bunch of good points and we should move on, but I think it's actually a good segue to talk about some recent changes that have happened to Magic Online decklist reporting. Do any of you guys want to talk about that, or do you want me to preface
it? I feel like you have a good handle on this. You should talk about it.
Okay. So I just saw on Twitter today a bunch of people talking about how they're only going to start posting a few Magic Online deck lists. And I'm going to actually read a little bit from what I believe is a Wizards Coast message board. It says it's from Sean Gibbons. It says it's in regards...
Before you say it, this is in an article written by Smitty of the A-Team fame, I guess,
on
formerly.
60 cards, on 60cards.com. You can find his article up there, and I guess we'll put the link in the show notes, but, like, I just feel like it's important to have this, like, position to be able to talk about this. In regards to the recent reduced event coverage, this was a conscious decision by the Wizards R&D team that wasn't made lightly. Ultimately, we feel that publishing every deck list leads to solving constructed formats too efficiently, resulting in early stagnation that's not fun for anybody. We still want to show new deck ideas every day and provide insight to the Magic's play environment, but we don't want metagame developments to become purely a function of data analysis. Going forward, we will provide the winning deck lists from all Premier Event Top 8s. We will also show the 4-0 and 3-1 deck lists for one completed daily event per each format per day. So currently, what they had done before this change, they provided all the 4-0 and 3-1 deck lists for every daily event all the time. And all the premier things, and that was how they reported events.
Right.
And so they've changed from that to reduce, basically they're just gonna only have one daily event per format per day.
As much as I appreciate their intent behind this, it feels sort of the same to, like, I don't know, like, the sort of, like, Prop 8 deal in California where you can give something to, like, give rights to a people but then take it away. Like, it's still in the same vein where you, like, you're giving this information to, like, the people to, like, to deal with and to sift through and try and figure out what the best deck is going to be, but then you take it away from them. Like, it makes me uneasy.
It feels a lot like they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle.
Exactly.
See, I like it. Because, for one, I think you might be overestimating its effects. Because the thing about looking at these deck lists before was you could see them and get a sense of kind of what the metagame is. Like, you know, there are decks you'll see a lot of. Like, if you looked at, you know, modern daily events, almost all the time there's going to be at least one Jun deck in the top eight. Like, or in, you know, that has at least 3-1. And, like... You know, so in you get to see the decks that are, like, the boogeymen of the format, like, that are always going to put up, are always going to be present among reasonable results. And then you would occasionally see, like, some crazy brew, like, 3-1s or 4-0s, if you, like, looked at all the deck lists. So what's going to happen is we're still going to get the decks that are, like, the boogeymen, which are the decks you want to know about if you're trying to brew for the format. But you're not going to see, like... the thing someone else brewed that they're doing well with, or you're not as often going to see that deck,
popular? The thing is, you want to see those random-ass decks that, like, are just random brews, because then it gives you the idea to, like, jump off on your own brew or jump off on your new take on a current deck. Like, I think you need to have that information. Like, the boogeymen are always going to be well-known, even if it's simply through the fact that we see, like, Grand Prix results or, like, Pro Tour results. Like, we're always going to have that information.
I think
you want to see, like, the lesser known decks that are being played and, like, try and maybe have your own take on them or try and make them into a workable archetype.
The thing is, like, I like the idea of the formats moving more slowly, especially with Standard, because I feel like people, because, you know, we get all these, like, outlier decks, you know, there are a lot of people that play Magic, so there are a lot of minds on when, like, someone that, like, does well with, like, an epic experiment deck, there are suddenly, you know, thousands of people, like, that really like that idea, so they're tweaking it and they're kind of perfecting it. And so, you know, if that does turn out to be, like, the best deck in the format, like, that's going to happen much sooner. And that...
But, like, then what happens if you don't see those decks, though? What happens if we don't see those decks and, like, the format stagnates in the first place?
If we don't see those decks, the format doesn't stagnate because the best deck hasn't been found, so it'll keep changing, but it doesn't change as quickly. And so that has two effects. One, like, it's not going to get solved as quickly, so we're not going to, like, find Cobblade as soon or whatever. And then two, like, one thing that's kind of frustrating me about Standard right now is if, say, I, like, don't have any cards and I want to start playing Standard and I have $500 to spend, I can just, like, buy a deck. And I can buy the best deck right now or the deck that, you know, is the boogeyman of the format. But in 2 weeks, half those cards could be useless. Like, it could be that, you know, a deck has emerged as popular that totally destroys the deck I chose. And so suddenly, like, I have the wrong dual lands and, like, you know, I don't benefit from owning a set of Snapcasters anymore or something.
But that's
and
always like, the risk of buying and trading card games. I think
that always happens.
Being a TCG player.
That always happens, and I'm fine with that happening. I just wish it didn't happen very quickly. Like, if, like, say some deck, like, puts up a, like, wins a Grand Prix and, like, people are starting to play it more, you know, if I jump on that bandwagon, I want that deck to be useful for, like, at least a month.
I don't know. My take on it is that's always going to be a hazard of, like, of TCG games, and as such, you're going to have to accept that risk.
And
like,
I don't think that Jacob is actually trying to say that he doesn't accept that risk. I'm saying
I'm accepting that risk. I just wish it would happen less quickly because then so say you want to be have a competitive Standard deck every week for a Standard season, like this is going to significantly decrease the amount of money you spend to do that. Because the most powerful deck is not going to like the best deck or like whether or not your deck is competitive won't change as frequently.
I actually think that that's not the case, Jacob, though, because even though these deck lists have decreased in number and you won't be able to mine the data as efficiently, A, the data's still there, and you could take screenshots on replays, and like you could write programs that took a screenshot of every replay that happened and have have basically the same information, only you don't know every card
in the deck. The thing is, like, I can get all that information I want to, like, if I want to put the work in, but I'm just one person. But what they had done before was that everyone had that information, like, readily available. So every outlier deck had, you know, 1,000 people working on it. And so, like, every deck is going to, like, reach its potential fairly quickly. And, like, that's what causes these quickly changing formats where, like, some, you know, someone will brew, like, a cool new, like, deck with Boundless Realms in it. And that will be at its best within a couple weeks. And so it might, like, you know, suddenly win a Grand Prix, but then people are already hating on it, like, brewing decks to beat it, and they're making those decks efficient so quickly that that deck's going to get knocked out really quickly. And so you have, like, a very different metagame every 2 weeks, which, like, it's good for the metagame to shift. Like, you don't want it to stagnate. But if it shifts that quickly, it becomes very expensive to stay relevant in Standard, which I think is a bad thing.
I wasn't actually finished. I think that it's actually not going to have that effect, Jacob, because we still have so many more tournaments so many paper tournaments than when they started to release these deck lists online. Like, we have an entire open series that happens every week from Star City Games. We have TCG player events, maybe not every week, but almost every week. Like, we just have with States, we had, like, 40 some odd top eights come out that people just mined for that data. Like, we're going to have a lot of tournaments, and like the number of tournaments and the number of deck lists that are being posted online is only really going to go up. Like, I really don't think that, like, it might suck. Like, you might be right. Like, it might suck that, like, metagames are going to start shifting more quickly because there's more and more data and people.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of a natural consequence of Magic getting more popular.
Yeah, and I think that that's okay. Like, honestly, I just don't think that this is going, like, I have a problem with this, not because, like, I necessarily hate their motivations. I think that it's, A, completely ineffectual, and B,
yeah,
I think that you shouldn't, like, stop, like, they're totally okay with, like, sticking to their guns on giving us something, like, that they've promised to give us for, like, ever and ever with the reserve list, but with Magic Online, they're just like, fuck no, like, you guys cannot have these things. We used to give you these things, now we're taking them away. Deal with it.
Yeah,
and there's not a mention on the front page of Magic. There's nothing even on, like, the Magic Online page about it. It's only on these boards, and, like, no one's actually said anything about it. Like, it's a relative secret, and yes, it does impact a very small subset of people. Like, I recognize that, but I think but that like
I mean, are going to be like the loud, like it is the same type of people that would be the loudest dissenters about this type of shift.
Yeah, well, I mean, you may be right that it might just not be very effective. Like, I could be overplaying it, but like it may not, if it is effective. Like, sure, there is only a small sub, like a certain subset of people that look at all those deck lists, but how quickly standard progresses affects everyone that plays standard. And that's true for every format.
But that's true. No, that's actually true. But the thing is, like, that still doesn't address the problem that I think it's ineffectual. Like, I think that, like, if you actually wanted this effort to be effective, you would have to say no information, no replays, no deck lists.
Yeah, I think, like, you would, if you wanted to be, like, really effective, like, let's slow these formats down, you would have to either get rid of or scale or, like, get rid of posting deck lists from the Star City Games Open Series, which they obviously can't do.
Well, they can't do that, for one. Like it's just, I just don't think that they can do that. Like, I honestly don't think that they can put the genie back in the bottle.
Well, they could. It would just cause an uproar among
them. No, like, how could they stop Star City Games from hosting an
open series? Add it to the rules of sanctioning events. You can't post deck lists.
Then they're going to have a... Then they're
going to have unsanctioned events.
Unsanctioned events, like then they're just going to say, like, okay, we have unsanctioned events, you don't get your DCI points for this, and...
That's a serious cost, though, I feel. I feel like that's actually a non-negligible cost.
Well, no, but the thing is, like, you're kind of, when you play in the open series, you're kind of shirking the benefit of sanctioned events anyway, because, like, it's, like, you don't get pro points for it, even though a lot of them are, like, Grand Prix-scale tournaments.
But you can, like, use them to grind for those, though, at the same time.
Well, you can get, like, it's higher monetary value, but you don't actually get any pro points from it. You can't actually, like, there is no way to translate going to Open Series to getting onto the Road Tour.
Yeah, other than just, like, that makes you good at Magic.
Yeah.
And so maybe you go win a Grand Prix.
Mm. Like, I think there is a loss to be said if they weren't to sanction those.
But that's very hyperbolic. The thing is, like, that's, like, this is, like, only in the extremist case, which, like, clearly Wizards is trying to avoid with the way they've both worded their argument and that they've just decided to, like, not do that much, just to, like, scale back a little bit.
Right. Well, the base argument was, like, they could conceivably attempt to fully put the genie back in the bottle.
They can't,
though.
It would
cause uproar.
The thing is, like...
Attempt to.
They couldn't, like, they would actually destroy their game. Like that sort of thing, like, doing...
I never said it'd be effective. I've never said it would be effective. I said they could try to do it.
Well, they are clearly trying, but, like, they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle on their own, and when they don't realize that, like, it's kind of like how China tries to keep the internet out. Like, it's kind of like the exact same thing. Only, look at what happened with China. Like, yes, there is, like, this, like, on the face of it, you aren't allowed to have free access to the internet, but, like, you can just, like, use a different route. You can use different ports, and, like, you get around all of that. Like, people have figured out, like, there's always a back door that you can go through. Like, people, like, there's still gonna be some guy that, like, writes software and keeps a program running on his computer all the time, 24/7, that looks and deciphers deck lists from the replays that are still widely available, that you can still look at every single game that's played on Magic Online.
It's kind of like the Whack-A-Mole game they play with websites that you can to print proxy cards.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like those websites disappear all the time, but, like, you can still write your own software. You can still copy and paste pictures from Gatherer into Word. Like, you can make proxies if you want to. It's just a matter of them making it less convenient.
Yeah, like, it's they're trying to do that. It's just, it doesn't seem like, it seems like this will be a, I don't understand how this will have an impact other than to just be, like, something you can do. Like, it's something that they have the power to do that I think will just do nothing. Like, I don't think it will have an effect.
You're right. It's just, It's still...
Hold up, Jordan.
What?
Can you say those words again?
God damn it. I never said I was disagreeing with Tandy.
I know, I'm kind of the dissenting opinion here.
Sort of, but, like, I feel like, I actually kind of agree with what you said, though, Jacob. Like, I just think that it's not going to happen. Like, it's just not...
Yeah,
like,
well, my thing is I agree with their goals, and... Well, but, like, I can see that it, like, I can see it just not...
Both financially and, like, ideologically, Magic is kind of a bubble. Like, card prices are a bubble, and people's, like, understanding of formats is a bubble, and, like, what they're trying to do is they're trying to, like, prolong the amount of time each format has until it pops.
Yeah.
So in a way, like, Wizards is kind of, like, finally admitted that, like, Magic is kind of like a pyramid scheme in a way. Because, like, they just have to keep adding more sets so things keep being fresh. But, like, it's a lot less it's a lot less bad, but it's just, like, they keep having to infusing new blood and new ideas and new things so that things don't stagnate and rot and die away.
I feel like Wizards would not take kindly to that statement. Like, let's get ready for the legal action now.
Calling
their product a pyramid scheme?
No, it kind of makes sense. Like, no. It's...
Like,
it's no secret that for almost every player, the expected value of playing Magic is negative.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying that Wizards might take issue with it.
Actually, they couldn't even do anything. Technically speaking.
We're trying to scare them, Jared.
Precedent. That's not even slander.
We're trying to scare
them. Yeah, no, if we say, like, it's a Ponzi scheme, they're like, yeah, but it's fun.
Yeah, like, that's
their concept. You're not trying to make money. You're trying to have fun.
Yeah, like, literally, that's the, like, I don't care that it's a Ponzi scheme. I love this game. I love playing it. Like,
and legally speaking, even if it was a Ponzi scheme, and we declared it as such out of honest belief, wouldn't it be slander? Constitutional law has to be malice. We would have to get something out of hating.
It couldn't be slander, but it could be libel. But
I think it's the same laws.
It's not actually the difference between slander and slander and libel is the malice. And it's the honest belief, but whatever. We just
drop some legal knowledge on our listeners.
We're splitting hairs.
Get some constitution.
And we're all clearly like willing to be wrong here, like, and that's the important part. Anyways,
I think it's been a while since we've had a conversation where no one's Jimmies have been rustled.
That's the mark of
a good. This is like around the horn on ESPN, where it's just like. Debates like nonstop. That's kind of how we are. Like Meryl's podcast, he's like telling us about design and like kind of the history of Magic. We're arguing with each other just all the time. It's wonderful.
Yeah, just like over the line. Why?
That, sir, is beyond the pale. Research study needs to be banned.
Oh dear.
It is an unconscionable assault on the Magic format.
Hey guys, you know what needs to be banned?
What?
Thragtusk.
We've beaten this dead horse. Moving on.
Can't
Hashtag ban Thragtusk.
Hashtag ban Thragtusk.
God damn it.
So yeah.
BTW. I just to finish up this one, I have to say that as a player that doesn't get to play as often as I would like, brewing decks is rather uninspirational when I look at every top list and it includes Thragtusk, and I can't even think of a way of brewing a deck that doesn't include Thragtusk.
Hashtag ban Thragtusk. Hashtag magic is a pyramid scheme.
Or hashtag reprint Gaddock Teague.
God.
Amen.
Wait, what was the one we were looking at earlier? What was that ley line? Like, players can't gain life, Tandy?
Ley line of punishment?
Yeah.
Ley line of punishment and then just play mono or like black red burn.
Yeah.
I really want Bump in the Night to be played.
Maybe they'll bring back those ley lines. We don't know.
They've actually said that they're not.
I actually had a conversation about Tandy about ley lines earlier. I just said that like I like ley lines a lot, but like I feel like it was regarding like just this thought about like if we were to design a set, and I was like, I was thinking about ley lines because they're such a cool idea, and then I realized that to like. Properly put ley lines in a set, your set probably is already showing problems to begin with.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Ley lines are a cool concept. Just the thing is, ley lines that end up being constructed playable are hate cards. They're things like Leyline of Sanctity.
Yeah, or Leyline of the Void.
Yeah.
To be fair, they've only really made Leylines that are hate cards or that are stupid.
Like, yeah, because like, well, I think, like, Leylines that are proactive would just be too good. Like, you couldn't have Leyline of Sulfuric Vortex.
Well, they have Leyline of Lightning.
That's the one that gives everything Flash, right?
No, Leyline of Lightning is the one where you can just, like, pay extra mana to ping stuff. Let me see. Leyline of Lightning. For the listeners at home, Leyline of Lightning has the Leyline ability. It's from Guild Pact. And whenever you cast a spell, you may pay one. If you do, Leyline of Punishment deals one damage to target player.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, but it, like, it doesn't do anything on its own. Like, you can't have Leyline of Grizzly Bear. Like, you can't just, like, start the game with the Grizzly Bears.
Going into, oh my god, oh my god.
Like, that's kind of cool design space, like, a Leyline is a creature, but I think it's too powerful. Or, like, potentially. Like, you'd have to have some pretty big drawbacks.
A creature turning into an enchantment with a separate cost could be done.
Well, no, I just mean, like, a creature with a Leyline clause.
Oh, no, that's busted. That's, like, flat-out busted.
Maybe you could make, like, Leyline of Grizzly Bear that's just, like, an enchantment that has the ability to become a creature for, like, Grizzly Bear cost. And, like, it stops being that at the end of the turn.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Interesting design space.
Yeah,
But, like, so, it's not broken, because, like, there's no, like, it has no, like, it's it has no mana cost, so you just can't cast it if it's not in your opening hand. That's a fair and balanced card.
Speaking of design space.
Yeah, speaking of design space.
So
of design space.
So I had an idea about, well, I mean, I've toyed with this idea for a long time, but, like, decided to, like, think about it recently. That, like, so we have Shards of Alara, which, like, gave identity to all the shard color combinations, meaning three color combinations where there are two pairs of those three colors that are allied combinations. And, right. You know, that, you know, is great for, like, EDH. Like, we don't have very many three-color generals that are outside of those. And then, you know, we get cards like Grixis Charm that are good in, or Rakdos Charm that are good in Constructed. But we don't have the wedge combinations, with the exception of the things they made for the Commander pre-constructed decks, don't really have identities. And there aren't very many. Like, if you want to play a black, white, green general, your only options really are from the Commander pre-constructed
decks. Or you're playing Doran the Siege Tower.
Yeah, that's the one exception. Like Doran is cool, but, like, some of the other wedges, like, don't have, like, very rarely is there more than, like, one thing outside of the Commander decks.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is having, like, a competition between us to design a set, like, at least mine is in the style of Shards of Alara, where, like, your basic concept is give some identity to the three color combinations, the wedge combinations.
Yeah.
Yep, that's happening on this podcast. We're designing sets.
Yeah, so Jordan's doing one, I'm doing one, and then I believe Tandy and Jared are collaborating.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we don't know what we're going to do with them. Maybe put them in a blender and draft them.
Yeah,
together.
The idea was to, like, do it, like, and just see how terrible it was. I mean, we also might, like, I'm sure that we'll probably post them online once we're all done with them, and y'all can look at it.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind drafting the sets.
We could also, like, even if we don't draft them together, we could just, like, draft
them.
Three of each. Like, this is...
Yeah, because the problem with drafting each of them is if they're on very different power levels, like, that could be problematic.
Yeah, it's just, like, pack one is, like, broken, bonkers, insane. Pack two is, like, Jordan's pack, and it's terrible. And pack three is, like, regular.
Terrible
is mine's gonna be balanced.
It'll be, like, say pack one is mine, and it looks like a cube pack.
Yeah.
And then pack two is Jordan's, and it's, like, Rise of Eldrazi, which was a great limited format, but, like, very slow and some, like, low-powered cards. And then, like Tandy and Jared's is, like, somewhere in between. Like, you wouldn't play any cards from you'd be playing all 15 cards from the set that's, like, a cube.
Yeah, and, like, one or two from the middle set and none from the bad set.
Just because I go for game balance, y'all gotta
do it. I mean, okay, it's you can be balanced on different power levels. Like, Like, you can just have a set with a higher power level than another set, and they can both be balanced. It's just when you mix them together, you know, one of them is more powerful than the
other.
Yeah,
that's kind of the historic problem with grab bag drafts, which is why it's not, like, a real format. But it's kind of fun, you know, like...
It's going to certainly be interesting. And, hey, maybe we'll talk about our forays into set design with you guys.
We don't have a whole lot of time to talk about, like, what they all are going into in detail. But, I mean, if you guys want, you guys could give just, like, a short, like, blurb about what you're doing with your sets so far.
In what sense of that word?
Well, Tandy and Jared, why don't you guys go first?
Jared.
All right, so we're doing a top-down set. Tandy, how much should I save this? Should I just go for the whole theme right now?
Drop the bomb.
Okay, so we're doing a top-down set that is based on the five powers that were fighting in World War II in Western Europe. So America, America is obviously America colors.
Oh God!
So Tandy, blue, white, red.
Wedges, you should go with them.
What was that?
What are the other wedges? I can't remember what they are.
Please tell me Germany is red, black, white.
It's actually I forget exactly.
Germany's rug, isn't it?
I it might be rug. I know it's blue, green, something.
I think Germany's rug, actually.
Yeah, Germany's rug, yeah. I can't actually remember because I don't have, like, our, like, notes up in front of me because I didn't think to bring
them. I believe Germany, or I believe Great Britain is junk.
No, okay, you know, like, we'll talk more about, like, which wedge each of them is, and we'll explain that later.
So your five powers are the U.S., Germany, Great Britain, Russia and Japan?
No, Italy, actually.
Italy, yeah. Because I guess you're just doing the European front.
Yeah, we couldn't, like, as much as Italy wasn't, here comes the historian, like, as much as Italy wasn't really that relevant to World War II, we just, like, couldn't fit Japan in, because that was literally the last wedge, and I just, like, I couldn't fit Japan in thematically to it.
Yeah, we basically couldn't make Japan work with the wedges that were left over after we had our kind of, like, the ones that made the most sense, like, where they were.
Yeah. And, I mean, you have some, like, flavor justification where you can, like, well, we're going to restrict it to the European front.
Yeah, yeah, it's not like it's just blindly, like, get the F out of here, Japan, like...
Racists.
It'd be like we're doing, like, World War I, but we're going to ignore France. It's just, yeah. Like, not there.
It was essentially that I seem to remember just to finish up that Japan, just, like, getting rid of Japan was is that I really wanted to do it, but the last shard involved, or the last wedge involved black, and I just couldn't in no way, like, justify black being a flavor of Japan.
Yeah, basically... Because, like, Japan's so community based and so, like, family based, it's so not the individual, especially around that period of time.
That is accurate. I would agree with
that. And just, like, in, like, the only reason it would have, like, and the only reason it could have even been, like, fit into black was just that it was, like, an enemy, and that would have just felt kind of wrong going along with, like, you know, like, the real, like, feel of the colors.
Yeah. But so that's our thing. Let's see, we should probably move on to one of your guys' thing.
Jacob, you go.
Okay, so mine is bottom up, meaning I started out just like, I want to give these colors a mechanical identity. Cause, like, you know, we think Esper, we think control, we think artifact synergies, like, we think Naya, that's like the aggro colors. And so I have come up with, like, I don't have my notes in front of me, but black, white, green is, like we hear junk tokens a lot, but I decided to take it, like, there's tokens play into it, but the main theme there is Reanimator, because all three of those colors, like, have graveyard interaction, and so, like, junk is Reanimator, what I call jank, black, white, red, is the tokens, but it's, like, very aggressive tokens and very, like, short-sighted, like, much like you'd think of red as, like, get in some damage now, like, the future be damned. the same kind of thing, but with some more, like, some black-white tokens feel to it.
Right.
See, Rug is just, like, winning with, like, value creatures. So, like, one of my mechanics is for Rug is Cascade, because I feel like that was a really great fit in the recent Plane Chase decks. Was there... There's Bug, and then what's the other color combination I'm missing? Black?
You have Rug.
Junk.
Yeah, I have
Junk, Jank.
I have my... Let's see.
Oh, America. I'm missing America. And so, like... Because I want to end with Bug. So America was kind of hard to define because it's very, like... When I think of America, I think of aggro control. So it's kind of just, like, very, like, spell-oriented aggro, sort of. Not like a burn deck, but, like, you're playing an aggressive deck, but with few threats. So, like,
right.
You know, something like Geist of St. Trapped is very at home in that deck because it's, like, it's an efficient threat that you can play that, and then the rest of your, like, have some cards like that, and the rest of your deck is support for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then black, blue, green was kind of the hardest to define, but it's, I don't remember what mechanics they came up with for it, but it's like when I think of Bug, I think of control decks, like, because blue, black is very control oriented and very, like, interacting with your library oriented. And then green, you do that, but you go big. So, like, you win, like, Bug is the color combination that wants to play huge sorceries and win the game with, like, Omniscience, I feel like, is a very Bug card.
Or, like, Praetor's Grasp.
Yeah, Praetor's Grasp. There's, like...
Praetor's Council. I don't even know what that card
is. Yeah, Praetor's Council, that's what I was thinking of, too. But, like, so, like, you win with big sorceries and you win with kind of, like, controlling the game. And you are very, like, ramp-oriented. In, like, that's your method of doing that.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
So kind of, like, tap-out control.
Yeah, your set sounds like it's going to be really fun. I feel like it's probably going to be, like, from what you've told me about it, like, it seems like it's going to be very cool. Like, it might be on a higher power level than ours just because it's, like, of what I think that some of the cards you told me. But you said you've changed that, like...
Yeah, it's kind of based on the color combinations roles that are in Constructed. Because, like, I have, you know, Bug is, like, control that goes really big. America is aggro control. Black, white, green is reanimator, so kind of combo-y. Black, white, red is balls to the wall aggro. And then Rug is, like, mid-range, like, value town.
Yeah. I think that you're really onto something. I'm really excited to see what you kind of do. Is there any of the mechanics just you want to talk about briefly?
So there's one mechanic which was that I have played with a few different versions of it. So I originally came up with, I don't remember what I called it, but basically it's an activated ability on a creature in your graveyard, and what you do is you exile creatures you control with total converted mana cost equal to the converted mana cost of the card with the ability to reanimate that creature. So, like, say you have a 7-drop with this ability in your graveyard, you can exile a 3-drop and 2 2-drops to put it onto the battlefield. Which, as you may be shouting at your computer right now, is potentially just fucking broken.
Accurate.
And so I've changed it to a total number of creatures, which lets me also play with, or, like, a determined number of creatures. So you could have, like, this ability 5. So you have to sacrifice 5 creatures, or exile 5 creatures to do it. And it obviously can't be sacrificed, because then you can just, like, loop if you have 2 things with the same mana cost.
I'm always going to call this mechanic the Synchro Monster mechanic, because the original incarnation was, like, the magic version of, for those of you who've played Yu-Gi-Oh! Synchro Monsters.
Mm-hmm. Which I was totally unaware of, for the record.
Like, he developed Synchro Monsters completely unaware of, like, the mechanic in Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, the mechanic in Yu-Gi-Oh! Was you sent a tuner and any amount of creatures to the graveyard with, or monsters, I guess, with the total level, star level equal to the synchro monster, and it just, like, messed up the game.
And for those of you who only play Magic, that made no sense at all.
It's true.
That was just a little aside. We can give a little bit of time to our friends who have multiple interests.
Nope.
So, thank you for telling us about your set, Jacob. I'm sure that we're going to have a lot of discussions about our forays into set design in the future. So, lastly, do you want to talk about your set, Jordan?
Sure. I'm sort of taking the same approach as Jacob and trying to create a bottom-up design, like really trying to come up with a mechanical identity for each of the sets. But how I sort of went across it is I began looking at the core color of each of the wedges and sort of like, how can I make that blend in with the opposing allied colors that are within the wedge?
Okay. Yeah, that's just like a kind of a side comment. That's kind of what I was thinking too, is like, you have the allied colors have a very strong identity. Right. And so like, how can you do that in a way that is uniquely their common enemy? So like with the tokens, how do you do that in a uniquely red way?
Exactly.
That's actually a bad example because black and red are the only color pair there, but it same thing applies.
Right. So for me, I'm sort of, in terms of flavor and setting, I'm setting it within its own, made to high fantasy world based on, and it's all centering around a single, court, sort of like Camelot and whatnot. For white, red, black, the main focus of that is everyone together or nothing at all. In the sense that I'm trying to come up with a mechanic that highly incentivizes attacking and blocking together, or just not doing it in it.
Is this mechanic banding?
Banding.
I'm trying not to band. I'm trying so hard to not make it
banding.
Make
it banding. There's no problem with banding. Banding is fun and interesting. I like banding.
We're going to try and move over. We're going to try and work with that.
Okay. Just to interrupt Jordan for a second, since he insulted me earlier.
Nope.
You guys, like, Jordan's notes are up on a list of Excel, and he has all these beautiful things written out for white, where it's like the primary characteristics, like efficient creatures, anthems, life gain, protection, inner beauty. Oh, and then black is like, all he has for black is like inefficient creatures, targeted kill spells, discard.
I understand that this is a rough fucking draft. The knowledge will grow, asshole.
It's okay, like, it definitely is going to show that, like, the black-green shards are probably going to be the best ones in mine.
Right. Well, I'm going for balance, so after a while, like, I'm not saying it's perfect right now, but it's definitely going to try and, like, get move for balance. Shut the fuck up!
Shut up, Tandy.
That's so funny! Oh, my God.
All of you.
Jordan, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at your preferences.
What? Anyway... In the blue-centered wedge, I sort of look to blue's sort of appreciation for making copies of creatures on the battlefield and sort of its like fluttering transient nature, also heavily influenced by the red also in there.
Yeah, so blue-centered guild, you mean rug, correct?
Right. Yeah, in rug.
Because that's so, the opposite allied color pair is red green.
Right.
Because blue
and so. And so in that, I'm sort of trying to play around with a token-type mechanic that puts on a copy of target creature on the battlefield. That would be exiled at the end of the turn. And it also, of course, has haste. But sort of trying to play around with stuff like that. For junk, junk definitely is the power in the many, but at a cost. And for this one, very similar to Scavenge, but
which
doesn't
one is it?
Require things being dead.
Which colors is it?
This is junk.
So black, white, green?
Yes.
Wait, didn't you already talk about that? I thought that was the all or nothing one.
No, that's red, black, white. Or white, black, white, black, red.
Oh, okay, I see.
Which I call jank.
yeah, I like that. So
the names of my shards are America, Bug, Rug, Junk, and Jank.
I like that. Like, okay,
I call
red, black, white is now jank. So yeah, so similar space to Scavenge, but trying to find a new take on it. Like, these are all rough drafts. America definitely had the same thoughts as Jacob on this one, and trying to create a sort of tempo-based game. But in this one, with the red also sort of punishing players as well, or punishing your opponent as well for, like, doing too many things at once. And in this one, the key word that I'm testing out now is sequester, return target creature or non-land permanent to its owner's hand, depending on the card, and that player cannot cast spells of the same name as the return spell until the end of your next turn. And then finally we have Bug, which again is, like, the big beefy creatures having some sort of authority, like, because green is the center and I wanted to base it on creatures. So for that one, I wanted to have, like, the idea of these large, imposing creatures forcing their will on everything else. So for that one, and it's called Authority. And then whenever it would, and also, like, I realized that curiosity effects were big in blue and green. I'm sort of sad about it being in green because I hate green, but that's beside the point. But sort of trying to get somehow milling and curiosity into a single effect. And we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm interested to compare our sets once they're, like, more fleshed out, because we're, like, kind of taking the same, like, we're doing the same method. Like, you know, find a mechanical, like, center for these wedges, but are coming up with very different things. Like, I kind of actively chose not to do tokens with black, white, green, or, like, not to make that the center of it. Whereas for you, that's, like, a token guild.
Mm-hmm.
Or a token wedge. Yeah,
it's certainly interesting.
Then, like, you are going big creatures with blue, black, green, and I'm going big sorceries.
I think that, like, it's gonna be, like I I'm a big fan of bottom-up design as a player, but, like, I've always, like, wanted to try a top-down design, which is why, like, I think Jared and I gravitated towards that. Also because, like, it'll be significantly more hilarious than either of your sets.
Yeah, yours is definitely gonna have the best flavor.
Like, the flavor, like we are, like, I'm gonna just say that there's a card called Starving Worker.
Oh.
Ooh, give us the text for this, the rules text and the flavor text for this card.
Jared, do you remember the flavor text? Because I have to pull it up.
He had to step out for a little bit, sadly.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna look it up really quick. Jacob, will you just talk for a second about something?
Okay, so this is a card. This isn't one of my mechanics, but one of the things I'm doing is a cycle of uncommon. So in Shrouds of Valara, we had cards like Slave of Bolas, where you had a mana, a colored mana in the center of the shard, and then a hybrid mana of the other two.
Right.
Meaning, to play it, you had to be playing a two-color deck, and you had to be playing either, like, in that example, black-red or black-blue. And so I think of hybrid cards, like, a pure hybrid card is you need to play either this single color or that, and then cards like Slave of Bolas, you need to play either this guild or that guild. Right. And so I want to do cards either, you're playing either this wedge or that wedge. So this one has a mana cost of a black mana, a white mana, and then a red-green hybrid mana.
Ooh.
Meaning, so you have an enemy-colored pair that you have one of each, and then the allied color pair that of the two colors that don't form a shard with the two enemy color pair, and that's hybrid mana. So you can play this in either, in this example, black, white, green, or black, white, red, but you need to be playing three colors to play it. And so this card is a 2/3 for three mana that I just described. It has lifelink, and it has a sacrifice a creature or discard a card. It deals one damage to target creature or player, and you gain one life. And I may change this to just target player, but the point of this is if you're playing it in the black, white, green deck, you get a discard outlet and, like, kind of a, you know, it's a 2/3 lifelink. It's a pretty good, like, hold the ground type of creature. But it's the purpose is to be a big enabler for, like, graveyard shenanigans. And then for, if you're playing it in the black, white, red deck, it gives you a lot of reach. Because, like, You know, say you get to a board stall and, you know, you have them at, you know, however much life, you can just, like, go all Arcbound Ravager on them and just sack all your creatures or discard all your cards, which is, like, which are both feel very black to me. Like, you can turn other resources into just draining them.
Yeah. Damage at, like, any cost. It's the at any cost that's the black part. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
So I've managed to find the text for the Starving Worker card.
Oh, dear.
It is a...
So which shard is this in? Like, which country?
This is in the Russian shard. The USSR. and it costs one green. And it, it can tap to add one of any color of mana of the USSR wedge. And its flavor text... And also, whenever it untaps, it gets a -1/-1 counter. Because the flavor of it is the creature is starving to death as he works.
Yeah, so, like, working is... Working, so what's his power and toughness again?
His power and toughness, like... The numbers are flexible, but I think that it should be fairly low, because I want it to be at a common. I think it's a 1/2, because it can attack once and get in a point of damage before it's a 0 power thing.
Yeah, if you want to conscript it.
If you want to conscript it, and oh my god, the flavor text, the flavor text is entirely Jared's creation. Like, he didn't even know he was saying flavor text, he was just trying to be funny when we were talking about it. But it was, he toils endlessly for already broken promises.
Oh, that's good.
Doesn't it hit the sweet spot? Like it's my favorite card so far, and it might end up even being my favorite card that we even design. Because, like, it was, like, and the best thing about that card was that it was, like, both me and his, like, both of us contributed equally to this card. Like, I made, like, the card, and he gave the idea. Like, it was beautiful.
Mm.
Like, he said Starving Worker, and, like, this
teamwork
card picked out. So, yeah, that's... Also, I'm glad that, like, you guys are okay with me and Jared working together, even though it means we'll have a funnier set.
Funnier.
I hate funniness.
I hate humor! Get out.
No more unsets.
Anyway, I believe Jared stepped out, so that was sad. We couldn't say goodbye to him, but,
Bye, Jared.
Bye, Jared. Anyway, we should wrap up pretty soon. This week, I think that we're going to probably have to skip a Fact or Fiction just for time concerns. But, hey, next week we'll have two. That'll be fun. We'll make them quick as well.
Oh, man, two whole Fact or Fictions? Wow.
Yeah, one of them will be brought to you by the one that we're going to have this week from Jordan, and the other one will be from somewhere else. Maybe even Jordan as well. We don't know. We'll figure that out. Anyways, thanks, guys. Unless you guys wanted to talk about anything else, we should wrap up.
No, I think we've babbled long enough for our fair listeners.
Okie dokie, you're good, Jacob?
Yep.
Well, thanks, guys.
Toodles, children.
For listening, toodles.
My word. Bye.
Your word.
My word.
Bye, listeners. We'll continue this fight, and we'll see you on the next podcast.